broadcasting from Brock University 103.7 FM CFBU St. Catharines.
You're listening to CFBU 103.7 FM's new program focused on contemporary issues and ideas that are defining St. Catharines and the broader Niagara community. You're listening to Niagara Voices and Views. We're inviting you to not only listen to NVV, but also get involved and help expand and enrich the conversation about issues in this region. Future shows will explore issues about poverty reduction, conversations about the creative city and gentrification, livable wages, education, employment and equity, and how all of these mix together in the place that we live in. We're looking for researchers, writers, reporters, producers, and hosts to work with CFBU in an environment that will provide experiential learning, developing skills, and help you find your voice about issues that matter to you. We're always looking for input and opinions. Check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or email us at talk@cfbu.ca. So this week on Niagara Voices and Views, we're taking a little bit more of a specific focus compared to last week's show when we talked to a couple of individuals and several groups about very specific issues that affect St. Catharines and the Niagara region. But really, any conversation that happens right now has to somehow happen with the knowledge or in the shadow of the federal election that's happening. And so a couple of the people we're talking to this week on Voices and Views are individuals who have made their voices heard in terms of issues in St. Catharines, and these are issues that affect other urban centers and affect the Niagara region. And so we're lucky enough this week to have a guest in Jeff Birch, who's the Executive Director CEO of the Niagara Folk Arts Multicultural Center. But that's a name that's probably well known to you if you live in St. Catharines in terms of your past history as a city councillor as well. Yes, Jeff?
Yeah, I was a city councillor from 2006 to 2014 in the Meriton Ward.
One of the reasons why I asked you to come on this show was partly because of a really interesting article you wrote talking about the need for an arts council, and also talking about access and talking about some issues, I think, in terms of gentrification with culture and cultural spaces. So I'm curious to hear what you think are the conversations we should be having about the current federal election as how it relates to some of those issues and how it relates to this region.
I think there are a number of issues that we need to discuss, and the obviously all levels of government have had a part in the revitalization of the downtown. Obviously, it's been led by city council and by two councils that were led by former Mayor Brian McMullen, and so we have these projects downtown that have really promised to revitalize the area, and they're in partnership with Brock University, especially as it relates to the Performing Arts Center, which was a federal, provincial, and municipal partnership, and of course with Brock as well when it comes to the school itself. So you have two distinct buildings there, and the city runs, of course, the Performing Arts Center. Brock University runs the school and rents the Performing Arts Center for performances. So it's a great partnership, and it kind of an example of how the different levels of government, educational institution, and the city especially can work together to revitalize the downtown area, and something I think other municipalities across Ontario are watching to see how we do it. So those are important partnerships. Going into the future, you need those partnerships. You need to kind of build on those projects, and so you have to have people should be asking candidates how they see the federal government's role in the future. Now that we've made these investments, how do we see those rolling out, and how can the federal government continue to be a part of those investments and continue to be a part of downtown revitalization?
So how do you see that happening? What do you suggest people do in terms of making sure that we are thinking about the future in that context to make more things like the center, both in terms of the school and the Performing Arts Center, happen? How do we keep that on the agenda?
Well, I think people have to be engaged in what's going on in our downtown area, because it's so important to the economic health of not only our city but the entire region. It is the urban center of the region, and there are some troubling signs I've seen lately. The last city budget, I wasn't a big fan of. They didn't do some of the things that needed to be done, such as there's an 80-year-old arena downtown that costs about $1 million a year to keep going, and most of the facts show that it's a surplus facility, yet the council bowed to political pressure and kept it open. At the same time, you have things like the community investment program, which is a very important program for developers to revitalize, and a lot of developers counting on it to, for example, fix up the back of the buildings at the back of St. Paul, right on the edge of those new developments. You mentioned earlier my article in the Standard regarding the arts community. There's a real lack of funding to the arts community. So here we invested in this great new facility, but we're way behind in terms of how much we invest in our arts community here. So it's kind of like buying a new car and not doing oil changes. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So a little bit troubled by some of the decisions, some of the directions that the city of St. Catharines are heading in. So what people, I think, can do is get engaged, make their opinion known, and let our officials know how important it is that we get this right.
So in terms of the university community, because this is something with the Niagara Voices and Views that we're sort of looking at in terms of how the election will affect students, how decisions within the urban spaces affect students, and that's something that in terms of this week's show we'll be touching on a couple of different things to make sure that students, especially those at Brock, but sometimes in the wider Niagara region, are clear about the issues that should inform their decisions. So how does all of this connect back to the university community here? I mean, we can sort of see a little bit in terms of the Walker School, but we're talking about future. That's a word that's come up a few times. Sure. So how does this connect back to some of the university students in the university community? Because they are the ones who are going to be defining certain things in the future.
Absolutely. So I think it has to do with livability. And so if we want to have this partnership between Brock and the community, and we want to make revitalization of the downtown successful in that context, you have to have you have to have the city there as a partner to make the downtown livable for students and faculty. So you have 500 students and faculty that many of them are going to want to live in a rejuvenated downtown. So there has to be an emphasis on proper residential development that can accommodate that. But there's also a lot of issues around public spaces. So I was really disappointed to see that the city wasn't moving forward with a civic square, which was on its radar in the last couple of terms of council. And that area around St. Catharines City Hall and the public library, closing down James Street and creating a civic square like you have in a lot of modern municipalities, those public spaces can be crucial to draw people downtown and for the quality of life for students and faculty who may want to live downtown. To have public spaces that can be utilized and enjoyed. If you're living downtown, you're not just coming here, going to work, and going home. You need to have spaces where you can, sit down, possibly take family, go with your friends. And we don't have a lot of those public spaces in St. Catharines as they do in other modern municipalities. So that's important. And I would also identify probably the Garden City Co-op grocery that a lot of people are trying to make a reality. The proper amenities for students and faculty in downtown St. Catharines, we have to have a grocery. It's absolutely critical. You're not going to live downtown, travel outside. A lot of people won't have cars, they're going to rely on public transit. So that is a really important initiative to support. And I'm not sure I've seen the support from any level of government that really should be there for that group. They're starting a capital fundraising campaign. They have a location. set beside the new parking garage in downtown St. Catharines, and they really need the support of different levels of government. So that's something people can really insist on, that their officials get their acts in gear and support that initiative. It's going to be really important for students and faculty in the downtown.
That is an issue that we're going to be exploring on a future episode of Niagara Voices and Views, just looking at those kind of necessities in the downtown, because I know I've lived in other urban centers where if you don't have a grocery store in the downtown, you've de facto killed the downtown in terms of it being a residential space. Mm-hmm. But I also find it interesting in terms of when you're talking about making it an interesting or making it an attractive living space, because one of the criticisms you sometimes hear is that you see individuals coming to St. Catharines to go to school or to go to work, but they won't actually live here, and they see it as a sort of temporary period in terms of their lives, which is kind of regrettable and something that a good space in terms of which to gather, or a space that's one of those public spaces that can belong to everyone but not any group specifically, can be quite good.
Absolutely. I had the opportunity a few years ago to visit Portland, Oregon as part of a livable cities conference. Myself and one of the current counselors, Mark Elliott, attended. And what a fantastic area. It's one of the most livable cities in North America. And, you know, it really says something. When you have cities that look at best practices around the world and then try and implement those practices, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can look at what works in other cities. In Portland, one of the main features is that every block or two, there's a public space. There's a place where people can. It has the most food trucks, I think, anywhere in North America, and the most microbreweries. And so it's just a really fun place to go and walk around. And there's all kinds of places to sit. Sit with friends, enjoy, shop, and they've made it into a place that's just a pleasure to visit and a pleasure to live. And that's really what the goal, I think, should be, both as a place that appeals to students and faculty from Brock, but to general population as well. There's a lot of people that might want to move out of areas like Toronto or larger cities, and they still want a downtown living, but maybe something smaller than what they're used to right now. And if we have a really vibrant, progressive downtown area, that's a great selling feature for this region.
So how do we make that happen?
Well, I think it's really attention to detail. A lot of things were already accomplished by a couple of councils that were led by Brian McMullen between 2006 and 2014. You have hundreds of millions of dollars literally in investments from the Performing Arts Center to the Brock campus to the $50 million spectator facility. New bridge is being completed. So all of the really large building blocks are in place. And so one of the disappointments for me right now is that I don't see that attention to detail that I think is needed. So it's great to do those investments, but there's a lot of follow-up work that needs to happen, such as, you know, civic squares and public places, encouraging, you know, small businesses, microbreweries, you know, just things that make the downtown pleasure to be in. One of the other things you see when you visit other cities is that, you know, they animate their downtown. And so having, you know, closing down city streets and having plays and music and those kinds of things, there's a lot of details that need to happen if you want to do that, but it's really worthwhile to animate the downtown and make it a place where people want to go. So I'm not sure I see that happening right now, and I hope that it does happen over the next couple of years, because we have to make the most of these major investments that we've made.
So one of the ways I imagine that things like that could be facilitated is through a strong arts council, because projects and individuals and the sort of creative class, although that's a kind of dangerous word, that helps make those spaces happen is usually fostered by such organizations. So could you talk a little bit about that, sort of bring it back to the very interesting piece that you wrote in the Standard?
Yeah, so we're somewhat behind in Niagara and in St. Catharines in terms of organizing our arts community or supporting it. So since I wrote the piece in the Standard, kind of calling for, you know, a reliable and even average funding model for the arts. We fund the arts about a third of what other municipalities our size do. So I'm on the Arts and Culture Advisory Committee for the city, and Councillor Elliott at St. Catharines City Council recently made a motion to strike a new committee and to look at proper funding for the arts. This is going to be a really important initiative, especially over the next couple of months. And they will take a look at other municipalities and how they fund the arts. And what I'd love to see is proper funding in the area of $500,000 to $600,000, which would put us on par with municipalities of a similar size, and to fund the arts through a council of users, as they do in other successful municipalities. So it's really an issue of looking at other municipalities, looking at what works, what are the best practices, and then bringing them back here so we can catch up and we can make sure that we make the most of these investments that we've made in downtown St. Catharines.
And that's something that also connects back to what you said earlier about not needing to reinvent the wheel, because there's a number of municipalities that do really interesting things. And that always comes back to making a city and making a space that individuals want to live in and want to be in, that being able to be within those kind of spaces that are really inviting and really quite lovely really seems to make a city.
Yeah, sure. There are places that have done it successfully, and we just need to look at those and adapt them to St. Catharines. Kingston and North Bay are examples that I used in my article that have vibrant arts councils that distribute, a decent amount of support to the arts community. And you can really see, I mean, arts is a huge sector of the economy. Means a lot of jobs, a lot of spin-off business, and so there's a great economic development argument to be made, as well as the fact that arts just makes our community better. So there's great evidence to support us making that investment, and I hope that happens over the next couple of months.
I think that is an excellent point to end on. Jeff Birch, Executive Director, CEO of the Niagara Folk Arts Multicultural Center, thank you for making time to come on Niagara Voices and Views, and definitely giving us some issues to think about as the election comes nearer, but also just in terms of how it's not like that's the end date for thinking and defining what our community is here and what it can be. So thank you very much.
Very true. Thanks, Bart. My pleasure.
These are your cultural headlines for the week of October 6, 2015 on Niagara Voices and Views. Donna Soke's solo exhibition Cloud opens Saturday, October 10th at Rodman Hall Art Center. Rodman Hall is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and noon to 5 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays. Donna is an assistant professor of visual arts at Brock University, and her practice includes video, animation, writing, installation, experimental collaboration, drawing, and printmaking. Cloud is an assemblage of limited edition prints and objects that explore relational meaning. Donna Soke has created a collection of works that convey messages that are sometimes absurd, often humorous, never singular, but existing in relation to other parts of the whole. Cloud runs until January 17, 2016. Anna Slafarsky's installation, A Man's Job, which includes three news box installations, will open this weekend. The news boxes will be located at Niagara Artist Center at 354 St. Paul Street, at the Niagara Artist Center Flea Market Gallery at 46 Turner Crescent, and at the Golden Pheasant at 244 Ontario Street. At each news box location, poster editions of A Man's Job by Anna will be available for pickup. The poster is comprised of a chronological collection of newspaper headlines tracking the relationship between the employees and the auto industry in Niagara that spans over 60 years, from 1940 to 2011. These will be on display until December 6th. Dr. Jennifer Hubbard, Associate Professor of the History of Science and Technology at Ryerson University, is the featured speaker at a public meeting on Thursday, October 8th at 8 p.m. at the St. Catharines Centennial Library. She'll be presenting a talk titled, Whose Data Is It Anyway? A shocking number of Canada's federal libraries have been closed over the past few years, and key scientific information has been discarded. Scientists have raised alarm bells as they and others needing key scientific data, and very crucially, the political policymakers, have less and less key data to inform their work and, in the case of the government, their decisions. Dr. Hubbard, a leading-edge pioneer in the emerging field of maritime science and author of A Science on the Scales, The Rise of Canadian Atlantic Fisheries Biology, and co-author of A Century of Maritime Science, will be speaking Thursday, October 8th, at the St. Catherine Centennial Library. All are welcome. For information, contact Gracia Jones, PR Convener, St. Catharines and District Council of Women, at 905-468-2841 or graciajanes@bellnet.ca. The Niagara Sustainability Initiative is hosting Let's Talk Governance, a climate change perspective, which will take place October 14th from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at the Holiday Inn and Parkway Conference at 327 Ontario Street, St. Catharines. In the lead-up to the October 19, 2015 federal election, the Niagara Sustainability Initiative has created a non-partisan expert review of the energy, environmental, and foreign policies of leading political parties entitled Let's Talk Governance, A Climate Change Perspective, with the goal of informing the debate surrounding the country's energy and climate future. This will be the focus of discussion on October 14th, so please visit niagarasustainability.org or call 289-786-0970 for more information. These have been your cultural headlines for the week of October 6, 2015 on Niagara Voices and Views on CFBU 103.7 FM.
So this week on Niagara Voices and Views, we're continuing a kind of show theme or a show focus, talking about issues that relate to what's going on in St. Catharines in the Niagara region, conversations that should be happening in light of the upcoming federal election. But these are also issues that should still matter to you every day and should still be something that we'd be thinking about post federal election here in St. Catharines and in the Niagara region. This week on the show, we're lucky enough to have someone that I hope his writing is familiar to you, because there's been a few very interesting pieces that have appeared in the St. Catharines Standard talking about some of the issues that should be on your mind in terms of the federal election. But this week on Niagara Voices and Views, we're lucky enough to have Professor David Siegel, who's a professor of political science at Brock University and also the interim dean of the Faculty of Education. So welcome to the show, David.
It's good to be here, Bart. Thanks for inviting me.
So could you maybe tell us a little bit about the conversations you think should be happening in light of the election?
Well, federal government elections tend to be fought on these huge national sorts of issues, such as the trade deal that we've been talking about and Canada's position with regard to Syria. And those things are really important, and they need to be a part of the federal election campaign. But the federal government also has a real impact on what happens in local areas. And sometimes, because of the magnitude of these great international and national issues, sometimes these local issues get lost and they're really not discussed as thoroughly and as effectively in federal election campaigns as they should be.
So how do we make sure that some of these issues that are important to Niagara and important to St. Catharines, how do we make sure that these issues do get discussed in terms of candidates' forums or in terms of how campaigns are defined?
Well, in terms of candidates' forums and things like that, such as are going on in a number of areas, we need to continue to ask questions of the candidates about these local issues and gauge their knowledge about these local issues, their concern about these local issues. You know, we're electing people who could serve for 4 years. In this particular case, we don't know when the next election might be, but we're electing people who could serve for 4 years. So it's not just a matter of finding out how people feel about an issue today. It's a matter of identifying people who have an ongoing knowledge and interest of a particular issue, such as a local issues, that they're going to maintain when we send them away to Ottawa.
how would that manifest in terms of something like the trade deal that we've been hearing a great deal about?
Well, the trade deal is an example of, you know, a huge international issue that's very high on the federal government's agenda, and it's going to drive a lot of the discussion in the few days that we have remaining in the election campaign. But the trade deal has huge local ramifications right across the country as well. There's been a lot of discussion of the impact on dairy farmers, and they've clearly staked out their area in this, and a lot of discussion about the auto industry. But there are a lot of smaller local industries who could well be helped or hurt by this that we're going to have to try to process what's going to be happening in some of these local industries, whether they're going to be helped or hurt by it, and try to make some fairly quick judgments in the next 12 days or so that we have of this election campaign. So, you know, and that's a tricky thing to do because these trade deals are very complex, and I don't think we know the full text of the deal yet. But the point is that these trade deals have very different impacts in different parts of the country.
And that's something that, with the history of this place, and whether it be the manufacturing industry here in St. Catharines, but also the way we've seen the city trying to rebrand and change what it is and to change what it does, this is something that, as you say, it does matter on a national and international level, and it is being presented as a dynamic example of federal or national economic leadership. But it is also something that connects back very strongly to this place in terms of its own specific history and what that means in terms of some of the changes and some of the innovation that we've seen here, both in terms of manufacturing, but also in terms of trying to become more of a creative city in that respect.
Well, that's right. I mean, we have lost a significant number of manufacturing jobs. General Motors, John Deere, there's a long list of these manufacturing jobs. Unfortunately, a lot of those jobs have been replaced by seasonal jobs, by jobs that are more, we talk now about precarious employment. And so we need to work to rebrand the Niagara area to have a more diverse employment base. I think all areas like Niagara that had kind of put all their eggs in one basket, such as auto manufacturing, are in some difficulty now because we're now understanding that economic development and economic growth works better in an area of diverse industries and diverse employment rather than putting all your eggs in one basket.
And just to revisit something that you mentioned there, the notion of precarious or sometimes what we'll just refer to it as like part-time employment in terms of balancing multiple part-time jobs, that's something else that really sort of illustrates how none of these issues are separate from each other. You wrote a very interesting piece in The Standard talking about poverty issues, and I think more so how they're not being talked about as much as they could be. And that's something that definitely connects back to what we're talking about with manufacturing jobs and with the notion of precarious employment, because, well, I might reference to an artist here who's done a project about the history of GM, and she made a very interesting point about the idea of having a job that you would have your entire life and the idea that you would sort of have that, and it led to this kind of foundation and the building of a community, and the kind of, whether it's correct or sort of a more cynical take on the notion of that being the basis of a kind of family notion. And she mentions that just because of the difficulty when all of that leaves in terms of trying to find your feet again because of the way that language is used and because of that sense of community. But that's also something that, in terms of those who have precarious employment, what that means with this area, and something I think that a lot of our listeners who are students at the university and sort of looking at where they'll be in 4 or 5 years? Because that's a good way to look at this as well, that we are very focused on the election, but these are issues that we'll still be dealing with 2 years from now. Could you speak a little bit about how this notion of change in manufacturing and this change in what the city is, how that relates back to the notion of poverty and precarious employment?
Well, the shift that has been made is the sort of thing you were talking about. I mean, at one point, having a job in one of these large manufacturing environments was a job for life, and it was a good job that paid a good amount of money. The kind of employment that some people are involved in now is sometimes contract work, moving from one contract to another. And sometimes that can be really good. It can be well-paying. It can be very interesting. As long as you sort of are able to move easily from one contract to another, which some people are, that works well. The greater problem is people in part-time employment who simply are not making enough money to make ends meet. And so what you have to do is maybe you can only find one part-time job, which means that you are not making enough money to make ends meet for your family. Some people put together a number of part-time jobs, and that probably puts them in a position where they're making barely enough money to support their family. But frequently, they bear the cost of a family life in the sense that if you have to work 12 or 14 hours a day, or at least you're away from home 12 or 14 hours a day, moving from one job to another and so forth, that imposes a real burden on your family life in ways that, you know, you were describing the community sort of environment of people working 8 hours in the factory and coming home. And, that makes for a nice work life, and it also makes for a nice family life. People who have to work a number of part-time jobs to manage to hold things together don't have that kind of family environment that they can draw on.
And I think to take this back to how we were talking about the trade deal, that's something that is relevant in this space in the Niagara region, but it's also something that functions and we should be concerned about on a national level, because I might even take your analogy a bit further and say that it also leads to individuals being a lot more nomadic and moving around to follow work, and that leads to the notion of any idea of having a sort of stronger community is almost impossible in that respect. So how do we make sure that these issues are talked about? How do we make sure that this is something that is brought up at debates and something that is kept on the agenda, not just now, but also in that sort of what will either, I imagine, be post-election bliss or post-election disappointment for a lot of individuals?
Well, that's a tough issue, Bart, because these big federal national issues tend to drive things, particularly at this point in the election campaign. The trade deal is going to be a big discussion. The NECAB, you know, it affects a relatively small number of people, obviously, but it's become, well, let's face it, it's a symbolic issue for a variety of things. And so that's going to be a high-profile issue. And so people are going to have to work really hard. It's something that local politicians and local activists, I think, are going to have to push very hard about to remind federal people that local government kinds of issues are very important. We used to talk about rich countries and poor countries as though it was the country itself that was the economic driver. We're beginning to understand a lot more that cities are the economic drivers, that you need a good, that the only way you have a good, rich country is if you have a solid base of small, medium-sized local governments who can provide jobs and can provide economic development. That's what you need, and it can be very difficult to convince federal people who have their eye on these great international issues that what happens locally is a very significant driver to their economic success. But you need to keep, you know, local people and some national and provincial groups of politicians need to continue to work hard to be sure that is on the federal government agenda.
A few weeks ago on Niagara Voices and Views, I was lucky enough to talk to Lori Kleinsmith, who is at the Bridges Community Health Center in Port Colborne, and we were talking about how to sort of keep agendas of poverty or prosperity on the sort of agenda of politicians. And she made a point that I'm kind of hearing echoed here when she said that you're seeing a lot more leading happening from a civic level, from a civic activist level. And she proposed the idea that sometimes you need to lead from the bottom up as opposed to the top down with these things, because making sure that your voice is heard and making sure that you show up and actually will ask questions and raise issues seems to be a good way to begin with this.
Well, it does. I mean, I've heard politicians and senior public servants a number of times talk about how they respond to noise. And the idea of noise is that when you are in a position of senior leadership, you hear a lot of rumblings out there, and you're pulled in a lot of different ways, and you really want to do the right thing, but you just legitimately don't know what the best way to go is. And so they respond to noise. They respond to groups that are well organized and that continually do a good job of making solid arguments about how things ought to change. And so I think making arguments around things like the importance of local issues in terms of broader national and economic development is something that we need to make some noise about to be sure that it doesn't slip off the agenda.
And I can think of no better spot to end than that as a kind of final thing to send out to the listeners of the show to make some noise and make sure that your voice is in fact heard. David Siegel, Professor of Political Science, Interim Dean of the Faculty of Education, thank you so much for making time to come on the show and raising some really interesting issues that I hope will be in our listeners' heads as they go to vote in, it's a little more than a week now, isn't it?
It's coming up very quickly. Thank you very much for inviting me, Bart. I would really enjoy this, and I do hope that people will think hard about this upcoming election and give a lot of thought to making a wise choice when they're voting.
I think this is an election where I see it as a very historic one, and not just because of things such as the trade deal that's just happened, which is quite huge, even not having the text about it, but it's quite a significant deal, and the fact that it happened during an election and what that all means. But I also see that some of the debates that are happening are very, very different than what we've seen before. And I'm not going to sort of say positive or negative, because we could be here for another half hour talking about that. But I feel that we're seeing an instance where we must make sure that our voices, even if our voices are disagreeing or dissenting, we must make sure they're heard. So you've been listening to Niagara Voices and Views on CFBU 103.7 FM, truly diverse radio broadcasting from Brock University. This week's episode of Niagara Voices and Views featured two conversations with two different individuals who bring a breadth of knowledge and experience to conversations about what issues are affecting St. Catharines and the Niagara region, especially in light of the upcoming federal election, as it's just a little more than a week until we actually go to the polls and vote in this 2015 election. And I would like to just hint that there might be some special coverage happening on CFBU the day of the election, just to sort of keep our listeners informed, and of course to bring some unique voices to that conversation, just as we've done
this week. We were lucky enough to feature two guests, Jeff Birch, the Executive Director CEO of the Niagara Folk Arts Multicultural Center, was our first guest today. He's also well known for being a very prominent political voice talking about a number of issues with the city, and I hope you enjoyed his focus on the idea of livable cities and the idea of thinking about a city in terms of what it can be, not just what we sort of settle for at times. Our second guest today was Professor David Siegel, who's a professor of political science at Brock University and is also the interim dean at the Faculty of Education there. And I hope you enjoyed that conversation as well, where we seem to touch on issues that matter nationally as well as matter locally, and also sort of illustrated how many of these conversations in terms of issues that affect St. Catharines and the Niagara region, that affect Brock University students, as well as those of us in the communities that intersect with them, how many of those issues and how many of those ideas intersect with each other. But they were both of our guests today in terms of a show that thematically seemed to be focusing a little bit on the election and a little bit about issues that matter here in the Niagara region that should be on your mind when you go to vote in this upcoming election. Looking ahead on Niagara Voices and Views for the next few weeks, there's a couple topics we're going to be covering. One of them is going to be talking about Canada Post, which in some ways has been an issue in this election, but has really been an issue ever since there's been talk about ending door-to-door delivery. And undoubtedly you've seen the signs across the country that declare that they support door-to-door delivery for Canada Post. So that's something that we'll be talking about next week. What may also be happening either next week or the week after, it's one of those things that you will have to tune in to find out about, but we did talk quite a bit in terms of my conversation with Professor Siegel about the new trade deal that Canada has signed in the midst of this election. And we hope to have a guest, and we hope to have some voices from the Council of Canadians talking about that deal and talking about really specific ways in which it will affect all of us, whether it be here in St. Catharines or in the Niagara region or in the larger context of the trade deal. And that's something I think a lot of you will be looking forward to hearing about, not just because of the history of this site in terms of NAFTA or free trade, but also because it's something that I think we should talk a little bit more about and have some conversations about before we go to the polls. So that's giving you a bit of a heads up about what will be happening on future episodes. And I also just want to mention that if you happen to miss any of today's show in terms of the conversations we had, you can go to our Facebook page for Niagara Voices and Views, and you can listen to those chats. We also have past shows available at our Facebook page for download as well. But you've been listening to CFBU's Niagara Voices and Views. Please remember to check us out on Facebook, as a lot of the links and a lot of the information that we talked about today with our different guests will be making its way there over the next day or so, so you can inform yourself a little better about some of those very important issues. And keep in mind that we're always looking for individuals to be involved. We're always looking for new voices, and CFBU is an environment that privileges experiential learning to help you find your own voice and express your own views about issues in St. Catharines and in Niagara that matter to you. You've been listening to Niagara's Voices and Views here on CFBU 103.7 FM.